going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
The State of Louisville Podcast Network is home to From the Pink Seats podcast, and it's powered by Kern's Corner. Grab the best chili and patty melt in the city, right in the heart of the Hotlands.
You're listening to From the Pink Seats podcast of the State of Louisville Podcast Network. Now, here's your hosts, Jacob Lane, Matt McGavin, and Vince McCoco.
I have missed these beautiful faces so much. Like, I saw Matt last night, like the 18th time of the season at basketball game. But I
all alone on press row.
Literally, Matt is in.
Literally, it was just me on.
Is that the glare on my TV? I could have swore there was a bright.
Talk about the saddest.
No, my hair is. I haven't shaved in like a week or two, so it's not the gleam's not as shiny right now.
I did ask you this. Matt wears a hat to every game. I'm like, does your head get cold in basketball games? Is that why you're a heavy hat guy to games? But no,
sometimes
I don't.
It does.
I haven't seen you all in a long time, and this is fantastic because to me, like, now we got the yesterday Rocco sent the official word, spring football practices, when they're open, we know when the game is, boom, bam, football season is like officially kind of back. So here we are.
Back.
Right?
Football
season's
back.
We got 2 weeks off, man. 2 weeks off was pretty nice. I'm not going to lie. What was the coolest thing that you all did in your 2 weeks off? Vince, what was the coolest thing you did?
I'm not going to say what you said. Five-star gas station followed me on Twitter, and it absolutely made my day. I mean, if you've been listening to this show, you know how much I love their bologna
potential sponsorship
cheese sandwich.
Coming?
You know how much I love their pimento cheese sandwiches, the follow.
The big chick, bro.
Bro.
Don't forget about Amy and the big chick, bro.
That. Yes, yeah, I know. That's probably what screwed us, I think, the UK game or whatever. But yeah, that was hype. But yes, I did make homemade gnocchi, and I'm learning Duolingo stuff on. Yeah, outside that, nothing, man. Yeah,
just the renaissance, man. That's what you've become in your time.
I get
off.
Bored. Like,
yeah, I see that, and you got some Call of Duty loading, man. You're just a man of many skills, Matt. What was the coolest thing that happened to you during the break of the show?
Well, I went down to Tampa for the start of baseball season, so. That was fun, but
they lost every game though.
Well,
and rained out.
It was originally supposed to be 3 games over 3 days, and the last game was moved up to Friday, so it was a doubleheader on Friday, and then on Saturday there was supposed to be that Saturday game, which was originally going to be the final game of the weekend, and they postponed it to Sunday because it was raining that day. And then before Sunday even got there, they said, "Yeah, no, we're just going to cancel it." So instead of 3 days of in 3 games over 3 days, I got 2 games in 1 day. So
yeah. Only one. But hey, still in Tampa.
I don't want to say the trip wasn't worth it because, you know, I was right next to palm trees and sunny 70 degrees while you guys were in the middle of some snow and sleet while up in Louisville. But
yeah. We've already established you're soft as hell during the cold football games when you're sitting up there in the press box with your nice heater and you probably got a little space heater on your feet and everything. And Jacob and I are just pounding beers just to stay warm out there.
Yeah,
it's
okay,
and it's very nice up there.
To tie this back to Louisville, before I get into the coolest thing I've done, I went to the the St. Petersburg Bowl in 2010 in Tampa at Tropicana Field. coolest place. Like that place is like an indoor Malibu Jacks of a football or of a
my dad's
know, baseball
always said
stadium.
That too. Playing
it was weird, dude.
Baseball back,
and that's why I was a little confused because I'm just like, you literally have an indoor baseball stadium like 15 minutes away. Just play the games there.
Nope,
is that place still standing? Did they not tear that down?
It's still there. They haven't moved. I mean, the Rays have been, you know, thinking about getting a different stadium, but I mean, like they've been arguing with.
Wait, do they still play there?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they had a stadium now. Where did this game happen? Where was
this game happened at USF? It wasn't it wasn't for the Rays stadium. No.
Okay. So USF.
All this talk about demolition and everything got me reminded, Jacob. Like, you know how much I love the Zoo. Like, they're bringing the train back.
Yeah, they are bringing the train.
They are.
That is huge.
I wasn't sure where you were going with that, but yeah, it was great. Like, and yeah, the train.
Oh my gosh.
Dude, yeah. So I follow this group on Facebook. This is probably one of the oldest things about me. It's like a historic Louisville, and then people will post like pictures of stuff from like way back when versus like what it is now. And the pictures of like the Zoo when it first opened with the train tracks. I'm like, dude, that is just so nostalgic.
I cannot wait. I will be there day one, like first people in line.
Dude, we got to get you to conduct the first train ride.
I will if they offer it. We got to start up. I have no issue giving the Zoo.
This is going to be like. Like Adam Sandler and Billy Madison in that classroom.
We will not ask for permission. No way. We will petition for this to happen. If we make enough noise in the community and we get enough important, influential people, you'll be out there tooting the horn, man. You and Jeff Brom out there conducting the first train ride. And I believe it. Yeah, that can happen. Okay, real quick before we lose everybody, we've got a lot to go into in the show tonight. We've got a great guest. We're going to talk about a lot of football stuff, but I want to get to what I did over the break. And I could go a number of different ways here, but I'm going to actually go with something that happened today as we record this. I was invited. I don't know whose idea this was. Bad idea on their part. But I was invited to be a guest lecturer in a college class today. I don't feel one that I'm old enough to do that. I don't. There's not an age limit by any means, but it was very odd, right? So I got to go back to my home, University of Louisville, the business school. Vince, you know, I never stepped foot in there. I didn't need no damn classes in there. I'm getting that spat. I'm getting the fuck out of there, right? But got to go in there today and one, just the buildup of campus. It just blows my mind. Like, from the eight, like, as soon as you get off of 65 South on Arthur, right, you have the ACC Network building, you have the JB Speed Engineering building, and then you've got, you know, of course, when we were there, fellas, the softball field and all that stuff was there. The facilities are fantastic, but it's the academic buildings that I've seen. Like, I'm just blown away, right? Pulling into the parking lot of the College of Business Park and go in. It's like the siding on the buildings is now like all this like really cool red material. Like the entire campus is just.
I mean, how about the Beltnet building itself, like the new brand new building that it's not really brand new anymore. It's like 5 years old, I guess now, five, around that. But I mean that I remember, Jacob, I had a little taste of both of like the old school of like Miller Hall still standing and people still living in Miller Hall, and it being demolished and you know stuff like that. So. It's definitely different, but I mean, in a cool way. I just would say bring back those the pillars that say that said University of Louisville, number one sports town.
Yeah.
Oh, the silos?
The silos. Yeah. Oh man, the dog food silos. Yeah, those
are
coming
back. That's
like
the only thing that's like missing of like our campus is really pretty as a met. I mean, it is.
Yeah. No.
Still haven't seen a white squirrel though.
The campus is insane. But
what was it like? What was it like talking to kids?
Kids,
but college age.
So it was a senior class, which to me, like they're close to like, I mean, some of them are like Tyler Shuck, right? They're probably like 24, 25, 23. Like they're old enough to be like colleagues of mine now in the for the employer that I have. But, you know, I thought I'd be a little bit more nervous just because like, I'm, you know, not a college student. I feel hip and I feel young, but then like, I'm super washed. Like there's a lot of weird things about me as an adult. That I'm like, yeah, I'm probably not going to connect well with college students. But it went well.
How do you do, fellow kids?
It went well.
You just walked up there and shotgunned a beer and just like, what's up?
I pulled a Jason Kelsey, went full, you know, conquistador mask all the way in, like drunk, cape, like all of it. No, but it was a really cool experience, but a very awkward moment. The group I was with, like, I made a joke prior that, like, hey, you should, like, on the slide where you have my picture and about what I do, like, you should put State of Louisville and just plug that for me because it's college kids. That's great. They did that, but it was so awkwardly presented that I'm like, I'm like the guy that's like, hey, I got a podcast, like the Kevin Durant meme of the girl, you know, of the woman, like, that's what I got turned into for just a brief moment. So I went back to reality really hard after sitting on this high of like acing being a guest lecturer. So anyways,
there's nothing worse than like, you know, that moment, you know, being, nobody wants to be that podcast guy.
Yes. Nobody wants to be that's like, hey, have you heard my podcast? But that's what I was for just a brief moment. And it was very sweet and very gracious that they put the logo on there and like, this is for my employer and like all this stuff, but still very awkward for me. So, all right, let's dive into the show now. It's just nice to explain pleasantries, right? This is it's like sitting at the table at Roosters having a beer with each other.
I know people wonder what I do.
Yeah, no, of course. They want to know more
about
how
many bologna, egg, and cheeses I ate within this 2 week span of not talking to them.
Yeah. And people know that you eat like ramen for lunch and then come home and have like, you know, like chili cheese nachos for dinner. Like that's just homemade, like natural. You're elegant tonight. No, tonight you're elegant. You're very
tonight
elegant.
Tonight I'm elegant, but the chicken cutlets I sent you a picture with, weren't elegant.
Okay. All right. Let's jump into what we're going to call the pre-show here. And again, let's just lay the landscape of the night of the show for you. We will be joined by Nathan Geese, who is of the Lubbock Avalanche Journal. He is the beat writer for Texas Tech men's basketball and for Texas Tech football. So he is going to come on the show for a very specific reason. You might say, why the hell are you having Texas Tech beat writers on your show? Well, if you're smart enough to figure that out, I hope you're smart enough to figure that out. We're here tonight to talk about Tyler Shough. Like, spring football, just a couple of weeks away. We're going to talk about that here in a second. But we really need to understand, just like we did last year with Jack Plummer, what is Louisville getting? What can we expect when the season gets underway in late August? And most likely, we believe that it's going to be Tyler Shough who is the quarterback of this team in a very pivotal season. And so we're going to talk with Nathan about what he saw in the 3 years that he was there as the quarterback in Lubbock and the ups and downs, the injuries. There's a lot of different kind of nuances to Tyler Shough, and we're going to get into all of that with Nathan. And then we're going to talk a little bit of news. There's, you know, some things that have been happening, the combine, the NFL draft is upcoming, and just some happenings. So let's dive into what we're going to call the pre-show tonight before we bring Nathan in. The pre-show with Mr. and Mrs. Bourbon, a fantastic partner of ours at the State of Louisville. One thing I want to plug here is that they now can deliver bottles directly to your front porch through their website. You can go to their website and you can go ahead and you can shop their full array of bottles. That's MrAndMrsBourbon.com at their store. They've got all those bottles there. You can search each of them. There's a variety of different bottles for the beginners and for those who are looking for the premium bourbons of the world. So Mr. and Mrs. Bourbon brings you the pre-show here. And let's talk about the combine, guys, because I've been working a career now or in the professional world for 7 years, and 30 years old. I've had a corporate job, if you will, since I was 23, 22. I've never made as much money in the short amount of time as Isaac Guerriando did in his tight underwear in Indianapolis. Okay.
The underwear, like, Olympics, as Country Brewer would call it. Yeah.
Like, can we talk about how nice it must be to just be like, oh yeah, no, I just made several $1 million by running fast. Like, that's exactly what happened. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, over the weekend, this past weekend, the NFL Combine took place, as Matt mentioned, the Underwear Olympics, as some folks have deemed it over the years, where we get these workouts that really tell us nothing, but also tell us a lot about the athleticism and just the intangibles of players. And Louisville had a couple of guys who went to the Combine 4, to be exact, including Jamari Thrash, Jawar Jordan, Isaac Guerriando, and then Jarvis Brownlee. And for the most part, Matt, it seemed like pretty positive reviews. Isaac Guerriando obviously caught the show and was kind of viral there for a little bit. But, Jamari Thrash had some big moments. Jarvis Brownlee had some big moments. I know, you know, Jawar Jordan had some kind of ups and downs, but some of the numbers there were exciting. So just take us through the Combine and what the numbers kind of looked like.
I mean, overall, yeah, like you said, Jacob, the numbers came out really well. The only thing that was a slight surprise/disappointment was that Jawar Jordan, I expected him to run a 40 like this somewhere in the high 4.4s, and he ended up running a 4.56, which I don't know if that's just what he's more so a product of burst and acceleration than true open field speed, or if that hamstring injury is still bugging him. But yeah, when I saw that time, I was, you know, a little bit surprised. But other than that, every other guy tested well in every position. Obviously, Isaac Grindo paid himself a ton of money because he had the, if I remember correctly, the top 40-yard dash time out of every single running back at the combine with a 4.33, which is insanely fast. He also led running backs in the vertical leap with a 41.5-inch vertical. I believe he was either first or second in the broad jump among running backs with a 10-foot 9-inch jump. And he did do the 3-cone, and he actually got under 7 seconds at 6.94, which for a guy who's 6'1 and 225, 220, somewhere in there, pretty damn good to do a 3-cone in under 7 seconds. And his 20-yard shuttle was 4.15, pretty good. Again, for a guy who's not little, who, like, if you saw his body type, you would think, okay, this guy is like a third down back, he's a power back. Like, no, he's very much going to be a speed back. And then when you take his measurables and then his combine testing and plug that all together, it produced, without hyperbole, one of the best athletic scores from a running back NFL draft prospect that we have ever seen, according to relative athletic score, which basically grades out their overall athleticism that's kind of weighted by position. Isaac Grindo, since they started doing this in 1987, posted the fifth best relative athletic score among running backs, period. He was 0.02 away from a perfect 10 out of 10. That's pretty good. And these are the only four guys that are in front of him. Justin Fargas from USC had a perfect 10, the only perfect 10 from a running back in 2003. Edgerrin James, Edge, my Colts. He had a 9.99 in 1999 from Miami. And then Jackie Battle had a 9.9 as well. James Stewart had a 9.98 to tie Isaac. Basically, long story short, he had a phenomenal combine. And of course, we use the phrase, yeah, he made himself some money this weekend for a guy who does really well. No, Isaac Grindo went from like a guy who was probably going to go on day three, like towards maybe the back ends of day three, because, I mean, he was the backup and only really started to show when he was had to thrust into position, to a guy where I would be shocked if he did not get picked up in day two at this point. Like, there could be someone who could get a real steal with him.
The Ravens. Yeah.
That's what everybody's been saying, obviously.
He's a natural fit there. Like, he kind of, I mean, I don't have the numbers pulled up, and I didn't watch a lot of Ohio State, but is he not built like J.K. Dobbins in a way? Like, bigger
he's
dude?
He's going to the muscular. Giants. The Giants are going to get a late-round draft pick out of Isaac because, you know, Saquon Barkley's going into free agency now. So there's your future. I can see in the future.
Look at that. Just all those kind of little dominoes falling to get Isaac into New York.
Well, you got to think, too. Like, Isaac, it's both Isaac and Jaws are in a really good position. In my opinion, any running back coming out into the draft is going into a really good position because, I mean, there's the older running backs. Nobody's going to take them. Nobody wants to pay them because of the injury stuff. And, I mean, they ended up just killing you. Look at what the Cowboys and Zeke and stuff. So, I mean, it's going to be awesome. I'm really excited for those two guys.
Yeah, I am too. And I think, you know, the same can be said for Jarvis and Jamari. I think Jamari's now probably going to be a day two, day three guy. I saw somebody call him a Jacoby Myers clone, which is really interesting just in terms of a comparison. And you know, he was impressive in the hands drills. He ran a decent 40 for a guy who's going to play a lot of slot receiver at the NFL level, I would imagine. He's a guy that, you know, could be a sneaky kind of guy that, you know, ends up being a, you know, kind of a late season fantasy darling, if you will. And then with Jaws and Isaac, man, like, I think it's particularly when you're talking about Jaws, when you put on the tape of the first six games of the season, if you don't see an NFL contributor, you're
crazy.
You shouldn't be an NFL scout. I think the combine has a way of kind of weeding out those who are not athletic at all. And those who are just not going to have the, you know, kind of next level athleticism. I don't think that's the case with Jaws. I think it's at the end of the day, like when you're trying to recover from an injury and you hear guys like Isaac, and I think somebody else mentioned like they haven't, or maybe I saw this somewhere, like most of these guys have not been doing football training for the last several months. They've been doing athleticism training for the combine, right? Running the 40, running the cones, running the splits, like running these things that in the end of the day, like, yes, they matter, but they're not the end all be all whether you're going to be a successful football player at the next level. Like, go back and look at all the busts over the last 10 years of guys who were just freak athletes, but
Anthony Richardson
at football.
Hey, I will not hear any besmirching of Anthony Richardson.
That's funny.
Yeah, he sucked at Florida, but he looked good in that month that he was healthy as a rookie.
How about Trent Richardson? That's another one that might hurt you a little
bit.
We're not
bringing that up.
Yeah. Didn't they also sign Bruce Campbell? That was the guy that my mind
dump it on him.
Bruce Campbell, that was the offensive lineman from Maryland. The Raiders drafted him, I think, like fourth or fifth, and he played for like a season and was out of the league. So you see that happen all the time. But I think Jaws is draftable still. I mean, and even if he's not, you know, the NFL is a I'll find a running back anywhere league. Like, they don't care if you're Nelly's character from The Longest Yard or whether you're Jawar Jordan or whether you're, you know, the star running back at your school. If you can play and take snaps and move the football forward, they will squeeze every ounce out of you that they can. And Jawar Jordan, I think, still has the skill and versatility to do all of that. And both of them caught the ball out of the backfield. So, like, the opposite of Javion Hawkins effect. Right now.
Both
they're going to get drafted
because
of that.
Both of these guys can be at the Checo for a team, in my opinion.
See, my thing is with Jaws, I mean, obviously he's got the speed, he's got the burst, he's got the pass-catching ability, he's got the big play ability. But, I mean, the one thing that's always going to be a knock against him is his size, fair or not. And especially at a position like running back where, I mean, it's not going full-blown the way of the dodo, but we've seen in the last 2 years what NFL teams and organizations and GMs really think about the position. I mean, you would have to blow teams away with, like, your physical intangibles and or production, like Isaac did at the combine, or like, I don't want to say that. How do I say this? His hamstring injury hampered him in the fact that it showed that, like, this one injury, like, really put a damper on his overall season, because he was not the same player in the second half of the season. That's because, like, his play style is so predicated, like I said earlier, not so much on the speed, which he has plenty of that, but the burst, the acceleration, that get up and go off the line once he gets that ball. And, like, it really hampered him a little bit. It's on the production standpoint.
Yeah, it's like an NBA player who loses, you know, it's like a Derrick Rose or like a guy who has that, you know, insane athleticism, and then they lose that and they can't shoot, you know, like that's kind of a you call that the Vince Lococo.
Hey, two ACLs, man. That was never the same.
Yeah, but I do think as we get closer to the draft, Pro Day is coming up just around the corner at the end of the month. These guys are going to get another opportunity. Maybe Jaws is a little bit healthier. But what I was going to say about him is when you're recovering from injury, you can't spend as much time preparing for some of these athletic, you know, events, and some of your athleticism is going to show naturally, but you're also still going to be hampered in some of these things, like a 40-yard dash where you see guys literally pull their hamstring all the fucking time. Like, so
what's his name just did it in the combine. I mean, he ran the fastest time and pulled his
Nate Wiggins. Yeah.
Oh, it was Nate Wiggins. Okay. Yeah.
That was Nate Wiggins.
Say. Yeah. How about Xavier Worthy though?
Woo!
Fastest 40.
That boy fast.
I saw a tweet that they estimated that if Usain Bolt ran the 40-yard dash, he would run a 3.8.
Yeah.
3.8. How fucking crazy
what,
is
what,
that,
let me ask
man.
You guys this. What do you think you could get off the couch of your living room, grab a beer, crack it open, and sit back down without spilling any of it in 4.3 seconds?
No.
Isn't that incredible?
I would like to run a 40-yard dash. I just like it wouldn't be Darren Revell bad. But
I don't because I don't
want to
know what the final one is.
See, I want to know what my score is, but then like my bets on DraftKings just hide that from the group so people
you
can't
don't
see
realize
like, that's
you don't
what
realize
mean.
How far 40 yards is until you're running it. Like, dude, bro, like you
who
get about halfway through, you're
tough.
Like, damn, like this is I'm really gonna run like a 5.59 right here.
All right, so let's talk about this next topic here, and this is a proposed Super League, right? College football is starting to trend towards the like just the SEC and Big Ten kind of squeezing everybody out, like absorbing conferences, and then just like kicking folks out of the power, whatever you want to call it. Everyone. Yeah, right. No, seriously, you're like you're totally right. But what in which way? I need to be careful here. In which
Vince
way?
Vince McMahon went around, right? Yeah, no kidding. He kind of bought up all the independent best wrestlers.
Okay, all right. That's what I thought you were talking about. Yeah, just wanted to specify,
like Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Not catching that reference either, but we're good here. So, Andy Staples, who is one of the top kind of college football personalities, and works with On3 and does a podcast for them, was doing a show this past week and was talking about this hypothetical Super League in which the Big Ten and the SEC kind of take over college sports, right? And it's an absorption of all the conferences. And what we've seen really, right, just to kind of set the stage, is the Big 12 obviously had the move of Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, which offset which set the in motion of Houston and UCF and Cincinnati to the Big 12. And then you have the Pac-10, the Pac-12 moves with UCLA and goodness gracious, Washington USC? And USC moving to just all those schools moving into the Big 10 and Big 12. And it's left this expansion conversation open for what's next. You've seen the past week or two that they're starting to try to, one, expand the college football playoff again. Like, we took all these this time to get to 4 to 12, and you mean to tell me just like that, let's go to 14.
12 is no perfect. Way. 12 is perfect. I mean, I'm even as a former – I might be in the minority or call me whatever, but, I mean, I personally, like, 12 games is pushing it on the body. Like, that's a lot for a collegiate athlete, and you expect somebody like – Jaws to turn around and then go have a good performance at an NFL combine right after like playing an extra many amount of games. Like, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to continue to add more games.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so in this scenario, what's really frustrating about this is Louisville is not included. Okay. So essentially it's the Big Ten, the SEC. The SEC stays with its schools. The Big Ten stays with its schools, but then they both absorb schools from other conferences. So the Big Ten acquires Florida State, Pittsburgh, Virginia, North Carolina, and that's it from the ACC. And then you have Clemson, Miami, and I believe that's it that head to the SEC. How Virginia in the
Tech.
Hell?
Virginia
yeah,
Tech.
Virginia, right Virginia Tech. Virginia Thank Tech, you. That's yeah. a very key piece to add, Virginia Tech. I just, like, I get this all three, like, we hate Louisville, we always take a star away, we discredit, but this is, I'm sorry, but one, Louisville basketball at its peak is one of the most profitable programs in all of college sports. I understand it's not what it was. College football, Louisville football just had a historic season. They have Jeff Brohm, who has done incredible things with Purdue. Louisville has been relevant in college football outside of a few years.
Heisman Trophy winner.
Right, a Heisman Trophy winner. How in the hell does Louisville not get included here? This is, like, Matt, help me here. Like, journalism 101. Is this, like, a personal vendetta and, like, the editor was like, no, put another ACC school and I don't care who it
is. Now, since these teams wouldn't be able to schedule Tulane and North Mississippi State, A&M Tech, the first three games of the year, they got to keep teams like Rutgers, Virginia Tech, Vandy, K-State, these teams that they know Louisville could beat, you know, they got to put them in there.
I don't really have an explanation for it, honestly. Maybe it's just one of those things where it just a little slipped through the cracks in this person's mind. And the guy who made it, Andy Staples, I like him. I started following his stuff when he was with The Athletic before he went to On3. So I like him and respect him as a sports writer and sports content producer. Right. But
that's my point. Like, this, I mean, it just seems like the basketball troubles have compounded what the view of Louisville is. And I get it was only 1 year of national relevancy for football this past season after the last 3 years when Louisville was good. Louisville had high moments, but there was just never like that breakthrough to be at the top of the ACC.
Yeah.
In this expansion conversation, I feel like the fit for Louisville is in the SEC. Like, I get over the years, the Kentucky rivalry has kind of It seems like Kentucky might be pushing a narrative to kind of keep Louisville out of the SEC. You've heard that. I don't know how true that is, but like, if Louisville is going to be absorbed into a league, we both know, we all three know, we're products of Louisville. We ain't going to no damn Big Ten. We're not an academic institution.
Going to Big 12 country.
We're going to the South in SEC. That's where we belong, right? As a state, you know, Kentucky, the school, they like, you know.
We wouldn't get in with the 20 money going to any games up there. Our fans aren't going to travel to Wisconsin. They won't even go to Illinois. Like, you're crazy. It's too cold for us. You can vouch for, like, going to, like, look, if we go to go and play Arkansas in the South, you have two reasons. It's warm, good food, and well, three, and Bobby Petrino's there, and you get to play Bobby again. Like, there's just all this stuff that gets compounded in it. Everybody would look at the SEC, these SEC games, and you could justify one of them being a vacation.
You could. I'm so tired of this Louisville. I don't even know what to call it. Like, just Louisville doesn't matter. People are not good enough. When in reality, like, I get it, it's not been the brightest 10 years, but in reality, yeah. Louisville is a top athletic department, a top athletic school. They've succeeded, you know, in every sport, football, basketball, women's basketball, baseball.
Name another softball. School that's had a Heisman Trophy winner and a Golden Spike winner in the same year.
You can't, because it's not happened. There's other things like that that you can't name. Okay, last thing. Let's talk about spring football. We're just right around the corner. April 19th, I believe, is the spring game, or 18th. I can't remember what the date is off the top of my head. But you got practice kicking off late March, and they've announced four or five open practices, which I am going to, mark my words, fellas.
Yeah,
I haven't gone to one yet. I'm going to a practice.
I can read off the dates for our listening audience, please.
For whenever he gives me a million excuses for not going to a single spring.
Give us the dates.
So the open practice dates are Tuesday, March 19th, which is the very first day of practice, Saturday, March 23rd, Friday, March 29th, Thursday, April 4th, Friday, April 12th, and then finally Friday, April 19th for the spring game.
Yeah. So here's the thing. I'm going to hold a show as the kind of leader of planning and trying to orchestrate us doing things out in the public and being a show, and just, it's not as easy as just showing up, right? Sometimes it is, but other times there's plenty.
I'm gonna be at all six. Management. I don't know what you're talking about.
Just shut up for a second. Let me just finish what I'm saying. Just
let them feel good, goddammit.
No, what I'm saying is I'm gonna hold us accountable, aka me, because you two go to practice. Vince gets pulled down to the field.
Well, no, with his notes. I go to the first spring practice that has no pads and stuff, and I'm like, oh, that was boring, and I don't go back.
My point is we're trying to upgrade this show and how we do things. There's no excuses for us to not be doing content after a practice. Matt, I'm going to hold that at least once, maybe twice. But I'm excited for spring football because this is a really important time. We're going to get into with Nathan Geese here in a few minutes. Like, it's important because you're bringing in a quarterback who is, in a way, a stopgap, in a way, a bridge to the next era. But there's also this competition that should, in theory, happen at that position. But when you look at this team from a whole, Louisville football is primed to take that step into college football playoff conversation, to be a legitimate top 12 team in the country, to go and play in this new expanded playoff. And if that's the case, like, these offseason workouts, of course they matter. Like, the grinding, the lifting, like, Vince, you know better than anybody. Like, the videos they put out. Yeah, for, I'm sure, right? But, like, for us as fans, like, we're the most hungry than for what we want, like, football. But, like, this is when the work is being put in. This is when the weight is being gained. This is when the, you know, Ashton Gelati is coming in and freaking, you know, squatting a house. Like, this is where we see those moments. And that is going to start to pay off for spring football. And this spring, you're incorporating Tyler Shuck. You've got all these new weapons. You've got essentially a brand new wide receiver room, brand new running back room. You've got a, you know, brand new offensive line, a brand new quarterback. Like, there's a lot of new faces and new folks stepping into new roles on offense. Defense, you have a very experienced unit back. You bring back probably the most star-studded defense that you have had since 2016. I mean, Quincy Riley, Ashton Gelati, you bring back all the defensive line, Ben Perry. Like, I mean, the list just goes on and on of these guys, the linebackers and TJ Quinn and Jalen Alderman. Louisville has the tools, right? But this spring is so important because of all the new faces, the incorporation of this new offense, Jeff Brohm really getting his guys to really take that, you know, this time to develop. And so how are we feeling, man? Like, general overview, you went to the media availability. Jeff's only spoken a couple of times. Obviously, I know the coaches have been recruiting. This is really the strength and conditioning coaches' time to shine. But, like, how are you feeling from just covering the team heading into spring football? Like, I don't know. It's an open-ended question. But, like, what does this mean for Louisville football?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I feel good. Well, I mean, I actually – it's funny. Before I came on, I finished my piece I'm going to have run in the morning for – projecting what Louisville's two deep depth chart is going to be. And I'm going through all positions. And when I did this same piece this time last season, I could point to a couple positions where I was like, okay, there could be a little bit of trouble here, or maybe there's not as much depth here as you would like, or, you know, something like that. I mean, I was going through and making my 2D, and I couldn't help but think, like, Louisville is in a, from at least the top end of your depth chart, Louisville is in a much better perceived position than they were this time last year. Now, the schedule is going to take a little bit of a tick upwards in terms of difficulty, but this is absolutely a team who can go back-to-back seasons with double-digit wins, whether that means going back to the ACC championship, going to a bowl and winning that. However the 10 plus wins shakes out, I can easily see this team pushing double-digit wins again. I know the over-under is 8.5, 9.5, something like that. I would hammer the over. Now, of course, we've got to see how spring all works out.
Hey, look at you giving some gambling advice out here, man. I love this.
I'm a terrible gambler. Don't take my advice.
Me too, man.
Now, granted, we've still going to see spring, and we're still going to have a spring transfer window where Louisville is going to be active, because the last I checked, there are 5 or 6 scholarships over the limit right now. So there's going to be movement. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
I turn transfers off. It's working on that for NCAA 24.
Yeah, no kidding. But this is a team who can genuinely, you know, threaten to probably to win the ACC. Now, would I call them the favorite? No, of course not. I think Florida State is probably the favorite again, because, I mean, they bring back a lot of guys. They bring back a lot of talent. They brought in talent. Clemson is still Clemson, even though they had a down year. I don't care what the fuck anyone says. I'm not trusting a goddamn thing about Miami. I will never do that as long as Mario Cristobal is there. So I really think the three front runners for the ACC are Florida State, Clemson, and Louisville.
I mean, I don't know enough about the conference at this point to agree or disagree with you, but I just feel from a Louisville standpoint, there's a lot to be excited about. I know there's a lot of new faces, but you talk about what comes back and what they're building upon. And you have to feel good about it. Is there a, outside of the defense as a whole, is there a position group, Vince, that you feel the most, you know, most sure about and most unsure about at this point? Or is it more of just kind of waiting to see how pans out?
I definitely would love to wait and see how everything pans out. I would love to see some practices with you guys at spring ball. More importantly, I want to see practices at fall camp, because I really feel like that's where, you know, stuff, you're getting a little bit into game prep. You're getting a lot more who's going to be the guys. What I'm excited about, though, with this upcoming season, this team, is Jeff mentioned the other day at the Trinity Business Circle event that I was at, an ever-changing offense. You know, he was trying not to talk about football, but, you know, he's a ball coach. He's going to relate everything back to football. So, you know, he just mentioned that, you know, it's not going to be consistently the same stuff all the time, which is refreshing for us and Louisville fans to see. You know, going from year to year with what we were used to, a Satterfield in the outside zone and the option to the boundary and all yada, yada, yada. We could go on and on. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Jeff adapts with Tyler as we get into it, with Nathan mentioning the running game and with Tyler, you know, his capability there. And Louisville actually having a good tight end and everything this year. We'll see how stuff shakes out. I'm with Matt, though. I mean, 10 wins is definitely seeable, doable.
Yeah, yeah. Achievable. It feels it would be a disappointment if not. I mean, how could it not be at this point after what you year one to year two? You're better. You're better on paper. You're better on the roster. You're better
exactly
in every place imaginable. I just gotta say, I know that it feels like it's the off season, but I am just still like, I'm just enamored with this program right now. Like, I'm still all in on like every element of this. I feel like year one, I know we got to this, like this high of ACC championship. Like my expectations are just like sky high, and maybe I'm in the wrong for that right now, but I just like, if Louisville went 14-0 next year, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, it would be, it would be the first time it's ever happened. But, like, I just wouldn't be shocked. I just feel like everything momentum-wise is in Louisville's favor right now. But it comes down to one thing to me. And it was a lot of the same conversation last year. And ultimately, we saw how it played out. The quarterback position, it is undeniable how important that is. It is just like the point guard in basketball that it forever evaded Kenny Payne. It is, and Chris Mack for that matter too, right? Like, that was the thing. Like, Chris Mack every year was relying upon Christian Cunningham and these transfer point guards. And everybody said that you know, Fresh Kimball, that it evaded Chris Mack to find the guy, right? Jeff Brohm is in year two of 6th and 7th year quarterbacks. And to kind of shift this now to talk about Tyler Shuck, fellas, I have been in the boat of most fans of saying, I think you might have gone in too quick. You might have gotten a guy just because you felt comfortable, salary cap expectations from the collective, like all of that. Like, you landed on this guy and it seemed like it, but I'm not sold because of what we just went through. And when you take that with the injury narrative that follows Tyler Shuck, it's hard to overlook that versus going back to 2020, the 7-game season in which he led Oregon to a Pac-12 title and was phenomenal up until the bowl game. I still have just had a hard thing my head around what Louisville is going to be at this point. And I think I've said it here. I've said it to you guys. I ultimately think next season we're going to see several quarterbacks. 2, 3. I don't know what the number is. It's not one like this year. It's certainly not one. But I think this spring,
to your point, what you mean by that, Jacobs, I think you mean the leash is going to be shorter for whatever that quarterback, whoever is out there. If we see some of the bone, if we see that interception that Jack had against the rollout,
Virginia interception, 100%. Yeah. I remember my take last year was that Jeff in the recruitment process needed Jack, and he said, Jack, okay, fine, I won't bench you, I promise, no matter what you do, I won't bench you. You're right, I agree with you on that. But
Plummer was like, bet,
you sure? We'll you sure about that? Yeah, we'll see about that. But I just think this year, you know, with Tyler Shuck and the injury narrative, there's the ability of having Pierce Clarkson. You got to play Pierce this year. You have to. If you think he is in any form or fashion a part of your future, you have to play him. I'm not an inside journalist, Matt. You can dispel this, but I've talked to folks around the program for my sources. I don't have sources, so take that as you will. People continue to talk about Brady Allen. Like, I'm telling you, when you talk about the quarterback position at Louisville right now, every single time it's always, and man, Brady Allen, like the final back half of the season through the offseason, like, came alive. He is a guy you can't sleep on. So I'm excited for him. Pierce Clarkson, Harrison Bailey. Obviously, you bring in Deuce Adams. You have Tyler Shuck. All of that to say, like, Tyler Shuck seems to be the guy. And so before we jump into bringing Nathan in, my question to you guys is he your guy? Do you think he is the guy? It's early. And obviously, we don't know what his status is right now. We don't know how active he'll be in spring. But how important is this spring football for Tyler Shuck? Matt, I'll start with you.
Oh, it's crucial. I mean, even if you don't see like a ton of playing time while you continue to rehab and recover and bounce back from that injury, just getting your mind in the playbook, memorizing that, getting used to that, you know, going through the motions, getting your reps in as many as you can, whether that be mental or physical, it's crucial because while you're still like on the mend and trying to get back from that, you've got guys who are hot on your tail who like this. If the second that you start to show a little bit of slippage, I'm not saying Jeff will want to like yank that leash off on Shuck, but I mean, Jeff has mentioned how they're continuing to develop the guys behind them. And the last time we did talk to Jeff, he specifically mentioned both Brady Allen and Pierce Clarkson. And I think that battle for the backup spot is going to be a fierce one, because if Shuck, knock on wood, gets hurt again, we're definitely going to see one of those two.
It's going to be interesting. Vince, what do you think, man? Because you saw two quarterbacks. But hold on, let me just say this real quick. I got to set this up for you. Nope. You answer it football style. Like, that's the answer. I'll run through the wall.
You want me to be a coach? You want me to give you a coach?
No, I just want to set this up, right? Because in your career as a player and coach, you had three quarterbacks, right? I mean, 2018, Sean McCormick. Jordan Travis. But let's just talk about Lamar, Malik, and Puma, Boom. Right? So this kind of open quarterback situation is a little new to you, right? The competition. Like, I mean, I know Juwan had to compete, Lamar had to compete.
Yeah, that 19, there was competition between those two. But
Just what is it like in spring, right? Okay, take me back to 2019 spring. Perfect example. It's cold as fuck. Y'all are out there in spring football in February. Like, this ain't spring. But what was that like post-Lamar, Juwan, Malik? I know Malik, I think, was he injured that year, or was that his
freshman
year?
He got injured in fall camp. So that offseason, that spring, is probably not the best gauge of things because there was a lot of movement in-house. Mike Sirianni was doing a lot with the team to get us under control and get us moving in the right direction so we could win 9 games that year. Without him, as much shit as people like to, you know, give him and everything, we probably don't have that good ass season. But that's kind of what spring was like for us. Fall camp now, it was, in my opinion, you could have sat back and said that was Malik's job, but they were still splitting one reps a lot, like pretty frequently. And then Malik obviously gets the injury and, you know, he goes down and it's Puma's job from there on out, and Puma gets hurt and then it's Malik's job. But I'm rocking with the young guys. Like, I think that opening game one, it'll be one of the Brady Allen or Pierce. I think it's going to be one of those two guys. I think for them at that quarterback position to be the starter are going to have a really good grasp of this offense. And I think that they have better talent and less injury history than Shuck.
Yeah.
Pierce in particular is a lot more. I don't know as much about Brady Allen, but from what you all have told me, from what I've heard from everyone else, he's awesome. But from what I've seen with Pierce, I think he's more talented than Shuck if he knows the offense and the playbook and what he's doing and everything like that. Yeah. So
I'm excited, man. Spring football is going to be fun for a lot of reasons. I'm really excited to see Colin Lacey, Ja'Cory Brooks. I can't wait to see Penny Boone in person. Like, I remember, do y'all remember what it was like for me when I saw Caleb Banks in person back in 2021? And I was like, it's an experience. Like, this dude is like a transformer in real life. Penny Boone to me doesn't exist. Like, you can't be 245 running a 4.5 40. Like, that doesn't, how do you do that?
Me and Penny Boone are going to stand back to back and we'll see who's 245 guts bigger.
And I'm not 245, but we can race and we can see what it's like for a 200 pound guy without speed to race a 245 pound guy with speed. And then I'm excited to see, like, what is Ashton added to his arsenal? What is Quincy added to his arsenal? Is Quincy going to be returning punts? I sure hope to see that in spring football. All that stuff is going to be really exciting. So can't wait for that, man. It cannot get here soon enough. And that really transitions us here as we hand it over to the interview to talk with Nathan and bring him in over what the next couple of weeks look like for us as a show as we get closer to spring football. Remember, we are the only always on, never sleeping Louisville football podcast, the only one that exists. We are the only ones who make year-round football a thing, okay? And so I say all of that to say that this is just the beginning. Spring football, we are going full force. The live show will be up and running here in a couple of weeks with 8 members of the show, right? So that's us 3 and 5 new people, some familiar, some not familiar. We've got some new faces. We've got some existing familiar friends of the show, but we will be back live, streaming live across social media platforms, talking global football in depth. Some of the topics we just can't get here to on the show. We just don't have enough time, right? Our spouses, they need us to not be here for 3 hours a week. And so we'll do all of that for the live show as we gear up. We are back for off-season content. We're not quite ready to tell you what that looks like yet, but just know we will be going mobile, as Bane says. We will be moving around. We will be getting out in the public. Excited for that. And then we are not done this week. We've got one more episode dropping. We're going to really dive into the NFL side of things with Louisville football, talk Lamar Jackson, talk the NFL draft, talk Jonathan Grenard with our good friend and former Louisville track and field star. This is the best part about this whole interview. Former Louisville track and field star, was a JUCO football player at that, coming out of Miami. DJ Bieniemy, he is the Houston Texans beat writer for ESPN.com. He will join us. And we are going to talk about Jonathan Grenard, Sheldon Rankins, Tutu Atwell, Lamar Jackson, all these guys going into the league. Jeff Brohm, Scott Satterfield.
I'm excited. Got a lot to,
yeah, man. DJ is my guy. Really excited to get this going. And the next week, we've got some more episodes in the works. Really excited about that. So be sure you're tapped in. Video now available on YouTube. Thanks to our good friend, Keith, getting all of that live. You will see Keith much more as we get in. I'm not going to even tell you any more about Keith. You're like, Keith, when? Maybe. We'll find out. So all of that to say, keep tuning in, subscribe, follow us. Be sure to check out the Louisville Reporter, Sports Illustrated, Matt McGavick's work. All of that. Let's jump in now. Nathan Geese joins us at the Lubbock Avalanche Journal to talk about Tyler Shuck.
We'll be right back after this commercial break.
From the Pink Seats podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Frankfort Avenue Liquor and Wine. You can find them at 2115 Frankfort Avenue, right next to the Manhattan Project. Full bar service and a full liquor store. Stop in there today and tell them from the Pink Seats podcast sent you.
Mr. and Mrs. is for everyone. From a more traditional 90 proof to a cash drink that's smoother. In 2013, Russ going to the hole, and boy, could you use that right now. Mr. and Mrs. Bourbon covers tastes, all different tastes of preferences, 6 different bourbons that they're offering. Be among the first to try Mr. and Mrs. Bourbon, the official bourbon of State of Louisville and the Starting 502 podcast, on shelves anywhere you find your liquor, and now online at Mr. and Mrs. Bourbon.com. Go check it out.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
What makes for a great vacation? Depends on who you ask. Are you looking to get away? Or bring everyone together? Do you want to get outside and play? Or see a play at the plate? Fortunately, however you operate, I'm the destination you've been looking for. The name's Missouri, but you can call me Mo. And I have just one question. What's your MO? Come see me at visitmo.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Jump back into this this football thing full force with a guest that I'm really excited to get into, because we've done this, as we mentioned in the intro, for the last couple of years now, dating back to Aaron Sorensen from Nebraska, who covered the Luke McCaffrey transfer to Louisville. And then last season with Jim McGill covering the Jack Plummer transfer to Louisville. We're doing the same thing this year with Tyler Shuck. And we could talk about this guy until we're blue in the face, but it really is beneficial to us to have that expert opinion. And so, as we mentioned, Nathan Geese joins the show now to talk about Tyler Shuck and his experience covering the team. But first, Nathan, how are you, man? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing all right. It's basketball season, so there's never a slow time, but I'm doing all right.
Yeah, well, Matt's got his microphone muted. He's trying to take care of the dog. But what I will say is on Matt's behalf is that he could relate, but unfortunately he's covering a not so very good basketball team. So I would imagine for you getting ready for NCAA tournament, Big 12 tournament, you're, you know, kind of preparing for these big moments. Matt is getting ready for his season to end and getting ready to cover the coaching search most likely. But let me ask you this. This was what Matt was going to ask to start the show, but we talked a little bit about it before we hit record, but what is sports season and journalism life in Lubbock, Texas for you covering basketball and football?
It's a bit of a mixed bag, as you know, because football and basketball, there's that major crossover season there where football's still going. You got to dip into basketball. It can be a lot, especially right now where we've still got basketball going full force. It's going to be a little while, but Texas Tech's obviously got nationally ranked baseball team, one of the top track and field teams in the country too. There's a lot going on. You just kind of try to figure out how to manage your time. And right now, obviously, my focus is basketball because I am the basketball beat writer. So I focus in on that and pick up slack wherever we can. Football, you guys know football, it just never ends. Every day there's something new, there's something That's else right. going on.
Somebody hits the portal every other day.
Every day, especially once the regular season's over, you're just like, okay, who's in now? Who's committed into this next recruiting class that we got to write up and all that? It's just a never-ending cycle. It just doesn't stop.
I feel like I've heard this before. I don't know. Matt, does this sound eerily familiar to you? The write-up of every player, all the transfers.
Yeah, I feel like Matt, you guys could have a couple beers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, oh, believe me.
The stories that the Big J journals, as you said earlier, could share for this kind of stuff, you get to sleep when you can. That's basically all you can do.
That's yeah. right.
Sleep and even when you try and get to sleep, you have things like a dog who refuses to settle down, want to try and interrupt said sleep. So, yeah.
Or you forget, oh, I completely forgot to do this thing that I have to do, and you got to do it the next day. It's
and then news breaks, and it just continues on and on. Well, hey, let's go ahead. Go ahead.
No, you think you got a little bit of a downtime. Oh, we need you to get this up right now. Like, okay. So,
yeah, downtime, and then you got guys hitting you up to come on podcasts and stuff. I mean, what jerks. I mean,
I know. What is that about?
Oh, man. Well, that, you know what? That leads us right into our next topic and my next question here, which is we don't know shit about Texas Tech football, to be quite honest with you. Now, we know, of course, the big pieces, right? We know about the head coaching changes mm-hmm. over the last couple of years. We know, of course, all you hear about is Pat Mahomes and being a Texas Tech guy. And of course, I put Cliff Kingsbury in my most handsome college football coaching rankings every year. So we know that much about Texas Tech, but we really, as we start to try to dive in here and understand what Louisville is getting and its most likely starting quarterback in 2024 and Tyler Shuck, it helps us to get a little bit of context. So let me start about in the best kind of way that you can summarize. How would you just describe Texas Tech football over the, let's say, the last 3 to 5 years, if you can?
Ooh, that's kind of loaded, because there's been so much change in that time. Joey McGuire obviously just finished his second year here, and it's really an interesting dynamic because usually when a new coach comes in, like we just saw with Deion Sanders, he came in and said, all right, I don't want you, everybody get out. McGuire was very much a different guy where he said, hey, if you want to stick around, we're happy to keep you around. We'll find something for you to do. We'll let you compete for it. And most guys stuck around. Shuck was one of them. He stuck around. A lot of guys did. But you're just now seeing the guys start to say after 2 years, like, okay, I'm going to dip out, go do something else. And what's so unique about Joey is that every day you hear another coach, the portal stinks, NIL stinks. Joey's like, yeah, if come, stick around. We're happy to have you. If you got to go, that's what's best for you. It's still kind of a work in progress on his brand and the brand, the cliche marketing word they use, but what he's trying to instill there. And it's going to take a little bit, but they've got some traction right now, which I think is a positive momentum from what they were before he came in.
Well, when you look at, as you kind of zoom in a little bit closer on the progression of Tyler Shuck and just the career at Texas Tech, And you look at Zach Kittley, the offensive coordinator. One of the things I found interesting in researching him, and really some of the praise that I'm hoping to kind of, and some of the things I've heard about Tyler Shuck in terms of as a quarterback, is Zach Kittley gives the quarterbacks the ability to audible at the line of scrimmage, gives them full control of the offense. At least that's what I was reading in some of the evaluations of the offense and his performance and being a starter. And then also that he really loved to push the ball downfield as a play caller, really looking for that deep ball. Saw some of the averages in terms of Tyler Shuck's average yards per throw and things of that nature. But how would you kind of describe the system in which Tyler Shuck has played in over the last couple of years?
Again, you're kind of a loaded sure, question because sure. He hasn't played that much in the system. But when he has played, yes, there has been more forward movement down the field, especially considering the previous offensive coordinator, previous system. It was a lot of those tunnel screens, just get a couple yards and move it there. But with Kittley, it was, if you got a shot, take it. And Chuck was not scared to take a shot downfield when he saw it there. He got more comfortable as he got time, because you got to remember, Kittley came in right before the 2022 season. So it was just kind of that feeling out process. And they only got a couple games together before Shuck went down with his injury. And then it's like, okay, well, there's him. Then they went to Donovan Smith and they went to Baron Morton. So it's hard to really say how he was, because we only got so much of a view of it. And that's kind of the whole thing with Shuck, which we'll probably get into, is that we've seen some of it, but I don't think we've seen all of it. And it's just kind of an unfortunate situation of why we haven't seen all of it.
Well, Shuck comes in from Oregon. What were the general thoughts for you all? Were you all excited? Did you all think he was the guy to get you all back on track? What were you all thinking?
Yeah, there was this sense of, ooh, we had a former Duck coming here, somebody that wants to come out from outside of
the
usual kind of area. And he had the height, and the arm strength, and just kind of that ability to push an offense. And it sent it, Joel, like, ooh, okay, we're making some movement here. We're making people want to come here. Cause that was about the same time Tyree Wilson came from Texas A&M. He winds up as a top 10 pick in the NFL. Well, this was also the previous coaching staff. So it's that very different, they brought him in, but then McGuire's staff took him over, sort of thing. But that was kind of the start of these bigger guys, these athletic and talented guys want to come to Texas Tech, which they hadn't had in a while outside of Mahomes. And he did not have a great career here. Statistically, he did, but they didn't win with him here, which was always kind of that question mark of, you got this generational.
That's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. How did you?
Who's the problem? It couldn't have been the head coach, right?
It couldn't have been. No. But yeah, but when he signed on, it was kind of that eyebrow raise, interesting. And again, he showed some of what everybody got excited about. They just didn't kind of pan out for him here.
With Shuck, there's the main storyline around him is that he's a playmaker. He's got playmaking ability, whether it's with his arms, with his legs, but the man can't stay healthy. I mean, when from the Texas Tech standpoint, like where do you guys kind of fall into there when it comes like maybe describing him as injury prone? Because like from the outside looking in, you hear a guy's had three back-to-back-to-back season ending injuries, and your first inclination is to say, oh, this guy's injury prone. But then when you do a little bit of digging, and it's not like these soft tissue injuries where he's like getting like little nicks and having to miss like a game for like small things, but like he's had like broken collarbone, broken fibula, like real serious, you know, like major injuries, and not like little ones that would sideline him from a little bit. So I'm curious, it's like, as someone who has covered Shuck for the last 3 years, would you fall into the camp of saying that he is quote unquote injury prone?
Well, I mean, when he had the track record of getting injured like that, you kind of have to look at it like that. But the one thing I say, he's not soft. Like these aren't like, he's just getting hurt because he because he's soft like that. Like they
it looks
just
like he's getting hurt because he lowers his shoulder.
Exactly. So that's the kind of the funny thing about this year. So last year when he missed that good chunk of games because he kind of re-aggravated the collarbone that he broke the previous year, I believe there might have been a separate collarbone. He's had so many injuries, it's hard to keep track. But he missed a good chunk of 2022, and then he came back, and he only played seven games, but he wound up being the team's leading rusher, in, especially in attempts, because he just the kind of guy, okay, if there's nothing there, I'm going to go. He's not afraid to put his body out there. So he's a warrior in that sense. He's going to put his body on the line for the team. But going into this year, it was very much of, do you want to run him that much? And we asked all the coaches. I did a story on it. They're not going to – they did a decent amount of design runs with him just because he is a tough guy. He can absorb a bunch of hits, but they didn't want him to. And that was – he's changed up his diet. He started working with his dietitian. He changed just kind of the way he works out, builds his body. That was kind of a big thing of – okay, he's still going to be able to run, but we're not going to ask him to run that much. So we got Taj Brooks back there. We got this veteran offensive line. And for the first couple of games, he didn't. Like, he was not – he stood back there in the pocket looking to pass, looking to hit his guys. And then it just so happened in one play against West Virginia, he makes a scramble because it's a two-minute drill to end the first half, and that's when he breaks his fibula. And you could see it after he got up. Like, he wasn't right there. But he still got up and threw a pass. It wasn't a good pass, but he still tried to. But it's kind of the how he's used. If you're gonna ask him to run, he's more than willing to do it for you. But I do think just because of his history, you gotta protect him and you gotta ask him not to be the hey, maybe just go down, go out of bounds, learn to slide sort of thing.
You said something interesting there that. You said whenever if it's not his first read, he's likely going to take off. Is that like a habit of his? Did he get out of that habit at all? Or is that more the offense and how everything was kind of designed for him and within the offense?
So one of the big criticisms with him here was that he would zone in on guys a lot. And one of the guys he really zoned in on here was Jerron Bradley. He was the big, I believe, 6'5" receiver. Completely athletic, very talented, obviously your number one receiver, but he would have a tendency, and I think every quarterback does, like they have their guy that they feel like they can trust more, and that was his guy, where sometimes he would just look, stare him down a little bit too much. He got better in certain spots, but then there would be times he would kind of regress back into it, like, oh, that's the read I'm kind of going to, and that's where he had those interceptions in the first couple of games where he would be too focused in on Miles Price is my guy on this one. Jerron Bradley's this guy here. So he did go through bits and pieces of that, but it's something that if he has more time, consistent time on the field, he can get out of it. Because I've seen it. He's done it before. It's just kind of that when you're not playing a full game speed like that, it's hard to kind of manipulate and figure it out without that full experience.
Right. So do you think his running style probably contributes to maybe that the injury history? Because I mean, a lot of quarterbacks, if they are dual threat, they're more of like the speed kind of side to side, like escape the pocket and try and scramble and get downfield. Whereas Shuck, I mean, obviously this isn't an apples and oranges comparison I'm about to make, but in terms of the physical running style, like there's some aspects of Cam Newton to his game where he'll take contact and he'll dish it out and he'll just get in there in the line of scrimmage, go north, south. And of course, when you get down and dirty in the piles like that, things can happen.
Levis, Matt.
No, I'm not making that.
I said it. I don't care.
I think that's fair, because if I'm remembering right, his broken collarbone came against Texas, and that was he was trying to dive into the end zone. I think that's when it was. So I think there is some of that. I do think he's too hard-headed for his own good in that regard, I think, which I think you want in a player is like he's willing to go do this thing. Maybe just make a smarter decision. Like if you just – like I said, if slide, go down, maybe don't just go head first into a linebacker at the goal line sort of thing. The West Virginia thing, that was just kind of a fluky play. I mean, because he had, like I said, he hadn't been running very much other than a couple of times where the defenses would be expecting pass and then he'd take off. Like, they lull him to sleep a little bit. This was one where he just saw an opening to get him upfield, maybe get him to field goal range, and it just kind of happened for him. I do think there's a little bit, I think the a little bit of the Newton where he's not going to shy away from contact, but maybe you want him to a little bit.
Yeah, maybe take a little, Vincent, you'll appreciate this. Maybe take a little bit of the Frank Ponce approach, man. Let's just get out of bounds there if we can.
Just get out of bounds.
Just get out of bounds. But let me talk about this, because one of the things that Louisville struggled with this past year, I don't know how much you kept up with Louisville if at all, but Louisville had a quarterback who was in a similar type of situation, per se, as Tyler Shuck. He comes in as a six-year guy. He did have familiarity playing with Jeff Brohm, but Jack Plummer was this guy that was kind of viewed as, he's got these skills, but he kind of has these bad tendencies, and this is the year where you kind of expect him to get it together. His biggest bugaboo was just horribly timed, ill-advised interceptions and turnovers. I look at the numbers for Tyler Shuck, and 36 and 17, 36 touchdowns and 17 interceptions over the course of his career. There was 11 interceptions at Texas Tech, but his touchdowns outnumber that. Tell me about him as a decision maker. Is he a risk it for the biscuit type of fella, where if he sees it for a second, he's going for it? Is he more cerebral and take care of the football, really kind of valuing being able to hold on to that in terms of a quarterback?
I think that's kind of where this year was an interesting dynamic for him, because if you look at the first two games at Wyoming and Oregon, you guys know how fickle football fans can be. If the quarterback's throwing interceptions, he's screwing the team over in so many
different ways. He's got money on the game.
Exactly. But what they were kind of, they were just looking at just the interceptions, not the fact that he had the three touchdowns on top of that, not the fact that he was moving them up and down the field. They just looked at the interception. And while costly, they didn't lose those games. There was a lot of other things for it. But he is kind of the guy that if he sees it, he's going to go for it, but he's not going to try to put the team in a bad position, if that makes any sense. Like, he'll take that risk, but it's not going to be, like you said, risky for the biscuit. He's going to take a shot, but he's more of the, let me make the play that makes the smartest sense in this situation. Now, you will see some intercepts because he does kind of zone in on some guys once in a while. I think once he gets into a groove with things, like he did at the end of the 2022 season, when he had that stretch of he was completely healthy, the team was rolling, and he found his rhythm, I think that is where, if you're looking for the high upside, that's where it is, because that was probably the biggest stretch of time he had on the field at Texas Tech. And he was really good in that time up through the bowl game win.
Outside of the injuries and stuff, what would you say, you know, is his biggest weakness as well as his biggest strength? I mean, we've talked about his running capability and everything like that, but is it his leadership, you know, his toughness, like we've spoken about, or, you know, he's got a pretty good arm as well from what we've seen from the highlight tape?
The thing about Tyler is, I want to know how to phrase this right. He's like, the guys love him, guys go to bat for him, but he's kind of the boring kind of leader. Like, he's the very matter of fact, I believe in this team, we're going to do this. Whereas the guy like Baron Morton, he's got a little bit more pizzazz to him. Like, he can fire you guys up a little bit. And that's kind of where especially Tech fans really wanted to go to him, because Morton is a guy that he's going to take some risk and they're going to look really bad, but he's going to make some really cool plays and that'll get you jazzed up. Tyler's not really that kind of guy, but he knows how to level with guys. The offensive line loved him. His receivers loved him. Everybody, the coaching staff, as far as I know, Joey McGuire's still going to officiate his wedding in the spring.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
What a fun fact, man.
You never hear that anymore. I mean, Jair Alexander for the Green Bay Packers, starting corner there, by the time he told Coach Petrino that he was not playing in the bowl game his junior year,
his stuff was already like in a trash bag packed up in the locker room, ready to leave.
Oh, no. Well, then you'll love this. McGuire is very much the opposite of this. So there, it was a Sunday, and after the football season, Tech Soccer was at home playing this round of 16 match. Shuck was there at the game with, I believe, Sir Roderick Thompson and maybe his fiance. I get home from that game about an hour, 2 hours later. He posted, "Hey, I'm in the portal." So 2 hours before he's saying he's in the portal, he's still at a Tech athletic event.
Oh, that's cool.
Then it was after the fact he had said, "Okay, I'm going to Louisville." McGuire is very much a guy like, you're still a Red Raider. Like, you put time in here. So we go into the bowl game media availability into the practice field, and there's Shuck working out with one of the receivers who also put his name in the portal. And we're like, "So you're just, these guys are just still here?" "Yeah, they did their thing. They committed to us. We're committed to them as long as they want to be here. We understand all that. That's their business, but we're going to let them do their thing." So it's a very different circumstance, but that's kind of, that's who Joey is. That's the relationship he has with players. And that's why guys like Shuck are able to kind of gravitate towards him. And I think that's why you see Tech building up a little bit in that regard.
That's cool. I love that. Absolutely love the fact that
in this day and age where coaches are trying to vilify the transfer portal and all that stuff, it's kind of refreshing to hear a guy who is not only just full on embraced it, just kind of still wanting to treat his players like equals.
You have to, Matt. I mean, like, the with today's college athletes and stuff, I mean, you just have to be transparent and be, I mean, you have to pivot. You have to be able to pivot at this point. And if you can't pivot, you're just going to end up retiring or go to the NFL or looking like an idiot bitching about it on Twitter or somebody on social media.
And that's where McGuire's kind of weird, because it was this same availability. He basically said, "Hey, this guy's still with us, but we know he could transfer because he's graduating in the spring. This guy's still with us, but he's still undecided. But as long as he wants to do this, he can still play with us." There was at least one or two players that had put their name in the portal, played with him in the bowl game. And they're like, "Yeah, cool." So it's kind of a weird dynamic, especially with what you see nationally. But that's just kind of what McGuire is trying to build around here.
And while I'm thinking about it, speaking of, you know, other transfers, you know, Shuck's not the only Red Raider who's now a Cardinal. I mean, Monroe Mills, the left tackle, is now in Louisville too. So, you know, blindside blocker, pretty important in modern football in general. So, like, what is, as someone who's actually seen every single game from start to finish, what are some of your overall thoughts on Mills, and what do you think, how big is it that you have your blindside blocker following you to your next destination?
Well, you need that comfortability with your offensive line. I know, just knowing Shuck's personality and how he was, I'm sure one of the first things he did was, "Hey, you're my lineman. You're protecting me. I'm going to get to know you guys and build this up from here." But having a guy that, especially on the offensive line, because Mills is solid. He's had a little bit of injury, but he was one of those guys that the coaches always look to. Like, that's a guy we can lean on here. The blindside blocker coming with him, that's a guy where, like, okay, you're my offensive line. This guy was my offensive lineman. That helps him get in with the guys that are at Louisville already or already coming in to work with that. So it's that relationship and compatibility that can help them a long way there.
Where would you put, back on Shuck, where would you put his ceiling for us at Louisville, getting a new talent? We're going to get, you know, a little taste of him here in this. Matt, how much? Actually, I'm not sure. Matt, how much of the spring ball is he doing before I say that?
I think he should be cleared by the end of spring. If not, it'll be close.
Okay, so we'll get a little taste of him in spring ball. But where would you put his ceiling at Louisville?
Well, you see, it's kind of interesting. You say he might get cleared for spring ball because if you remember, you probably didn't. But when he first got that injury, they said 6 to 8 weeks, and we're all like, "Are you sure about that?" And then with like 3 weeks left in the regular season, he was still on the scooter. And like, yeah, no, that was very ambitious of you. ceiling wise, I mean, you hate for this narrative to follow a guy around, but it just really does come down to, can he stay healthy? Because if you go back to even his time in Oregon, he has not played a full season, because at Oregon, when he was the starter, that was the COVID year. They didn't have a full schedule then. In 3 years, he played 15 games here. But when he was on the field, he was really good. Entering this year, he was 8-1 as a starter at Tech. He showed what he's capable of. And you really hate that that's this kind of the thing, but some guys just kind of have that. If you can't stay on the field, then what? That's why I've kind of had a little bit of trouble answering some of this, because you just don't really know, because he hasn't been there long enough.
Yeah, I mean, you've almost just gotten little samples and little tits. I mean, like an appetizer sampler of Tyler Shuck. That's all you had right there.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like they're giving out something at the supermarket. I really like that. Where is it? It was here a little while.
Sold out. Sold out.
It might be back in stock later. We're not sure, but
it actually transferred to the Walmart.
So imagine the scenario, right? I say to you, Tyler Shuck is fully healthy. Like, he's invincible for a full season. He might get nicked up, but he's playing every game, and he's going to be at his best health wise. Okay. And I'm not saying performance wise, but at his best health wise. And then say that I give him the reigning MAC player of the year, a running back who is 240-ish pounds, but runs like a 4.45 40. I give him some really solid wide receivers, one of which was a former five-star at Alabama who caught a massive touchdown in one of the biggest moments. I give him one of the best transfers in all of college football at the wide receiver position. I give him tight ends, one that's probably an NFL caliber tight end in this offensive line that's built with a lot of transfer pieces, but a lot of experienced football players. And I say to you, what can he do with that? What would your answer? I know, and that's tough, because, right, you've only gotten the appetizer, and I'm asking you to describe both the entree and dessert and what it's like next time I come back. But just, again, just take the best and worst of what you've seen and then apply it to that situation. Where does Louisville kind of shake out with the quarterback that it gets?
If all of that came together and he's on the field, I honestly think he's a guy at least 3,000 passing yards, probably hovering around the 30 touchdown mark. INTs might be a little high, maybe the 12, the 15, but they're going to be ones where he's like, I feel like this is going to be a big play for us and we can bust this thing open. And probably about 300, 400 rushing yards, assuming if they want to use him that way, because I do believe he is capable of doing this stuff if he can stay on the field like that. He's a very solid guy. I think he said he was projected mid to late rounds in the NFL draft last offseason. But then you're kind of coming into, well, he's this much older now, going into the process after the 2024 season. But I do think you could kind of see him being that. Well, here's a guy you kind of forgot had all this talent, but now he's kind of doing this thing. We've seen it a couple of times with some of these transfers. You just need to get out and go somewhere else, and things just happen in a better way for you.
So when you look at Shuck from like a 30,000 foot view and you put together the pros and cons, you've got, of course, the cons, you've got the injury potential, you've got the, I don't want to say inclination to maybe turn the ball over, but, you know, turnovers happen.
Mm-hmm.
They do. But then you look at the pros, and this is a guy who is a playmaker, both with his arm and his legs, has the talent that a lot of people in the NFL would probably want. Not saying that he's like an NFL player, but like, as far as like the physical intangibles go, like, this is the kind of guy the NFL guys want. And when it's all going, he can be the guy that he might make some losing plays. He can make some winning plays as well. Would you, when you put those two columns together, would you say that the pros outweigh the cons?
Absolutely. I think this is a low risk, high reward sort of thing. And if, honestly, if he wanted to be at Texas Tech right now, and if he felt like he would be the guy going forward, he would still be here. The thing without so much saying it, it was kind of these this understanding of Shuck and McGuire kind of had this conversation of, you can come back if you want to, there's no guarantee you're a starter. But they both kind of understood it's just kind of time to move in different directions, sort of thing. And so there was no hard feelings either way. And that's, he's talking about leadership qualities. I think that's kind of where he's at. If it does work out, it's a great thing for Louisville. I do think the Cardinals could really benefit from a guy like him. I think any team could benefit from a guy who's just been around as long as he has, because you can't replicate life experience. Sometimes that's just kind of a big thing, and he's had a lot of life experience, sort of thing. That can help with something like that. And if he does get injured again, well, you know what? Maybe just not in the cards for him, sort of thing. But I do think it's low risk, high reward if it does work out for him.
That is fascinating stuff. See, this is why we go to the experts here. I appreciate this this conversation, because again, we've talked about this for a while now, obviously since his commitment, and it was really interesting just to kind of give you some insight into how it played out. I mean, Louisville obviously needed a quarterback. There's a couple of guys who are very much capable of playing next season, but needed a quarterback, it seemed like, to kind of bridge going from being a fringe playoff team to kind of being in the playoff conversation when it's a 12-team playoff race versus four. But Tyler Shuck wasn't, when his name first was mentioned, it was in connection to Jawar Jordan, a former, I think, high school teammate of his or something in that regards.
Yeah.
And Louisville fans were kind of mixed, you know, because you're talking about a guy who was playing and going to his seventh college football season. I struggled in college and I wasn't there for 7 years. I know he's definitely not getting his undergrad right now, right? He's probably closer to his PhD than he is his undergrad. But point being, you know, you're not, it's hard to get excited about a seventh year guy unless there's some intangibles, and it's taken a little bit for some of that to kind of catch up. But at the time, there was a lot of disappointment. Like, it felt like Louisville could go out and get a bigger name. And so to wrap it up on the show, what I want to ask this question. Matt got on me a couple weeks ago when I used the phrase game manager to describe him. How do you feel about that in relation to him? Am I off because I'm not a journalist? Are you going with your counterpart, Big J journalist, over here with that in terms of him being far more dynamic than that?
There are some tendencies. There have been times where he's been, looks like a game manager, and you'll probably see that if he is the starter and he's the guy going, you'll see that a little bit, but there is more to his game than just being a game manager. Where I do, I mean, if you want to, just because he's the first name off the top of my head, everybody said Brock Purdy's the same guy. Kind of the same thing. It's not going to excite you a ton, but you can see, like, oh, he can make that throw. He can make that read. He's going to put things into tight windows if he kind of needs to. It's just kind of balancing that game manager with that gunslinger mentality, which I think he's been capable of doing. Again, it just comes down to, we haven't seen it a ton because he hasn't played a ton, but it's there. He's more than that. He can be both, but he's a little bit more than just a game manager.
He's a game slinger. I like that. That's a good description of what a quarterback. He's part game manager, part game gunslinger. Slinger. We're a game slinger.
And
man,
it's all dependent on if he stays healthy or not.
That's right.
There you go.
So many dynamics at play here. So, Nathan, thank you so much for joining us after a busy couple of days covering the basketball team. We here are jealous,
so jealous.
Of what it's like to have an NCAA tournament team. I'm thank you so much. All the best of luck to you as you get to go. Hopefully you get a Final Four run or something, man. We'll be rooting for you in regards to that.
All right, well, thanks for having me, and hopefully I provided some kind of insight for this.
Yes, a lot of insight. Oh, we appreciate it, brother. Thank you so much. That will do it. A big thank you to Nathan Geese. A ton of insightful information there on Tyler Shuck and what Louisville fans can expect from their quarterback in 2024. As I mentioned at the start of the show, we are not done. We are just getting started. Consider this the start of a new season as we dive into the offseason. Before we do that, spring football coming hot and heavy. The live show will be coming soon. We've got a couple of episodes over the next couple of days, including with DJ Bieniemy of ESPN.com, who covers the Houston Texans. And then, of course, we'll dive into all of the offseason content following spring football. Stay tuned in. Follow us at Pink Seat Spot on Twitter, at The State of Lou, at U of L Report. And until next time, ladies and gentlemen, go Cards.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.